Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Hi, everyone. Welcome into B-Town's continuing coverage of the impact of COVID-19 here in Rhode Island. I'm Bill Bartholomew. On this episode, a conversation with Representative Mike Chippendale on when Rhode Island's General Assembly might return to session. So I responded to a tweet that I saw Candace Owens tweeted out, something to the effect of, we're in a period of socialism right now, or we're kind of getting a taste of that. And I tweeted out, LOL, as a response to it. You asked me then on Twitter, and we kind of got into a conversation where other people started to inject their opinions and everything. So we paused that conversation. Here we are in a podcast form. So the reason that I find the notion that we're in socialism right now laughable is because of the fact that there are so many people who are, yes, there are people right now who are collecting unemployment and the bonus and so on and so forth, but there are people who are working in hazardous conditions of any stripe, and they're not, the government hasn't elevated them to a level of equality, so to speak, where everybody's getting the same payout. I think you were thinking more in terms, and again, we'll get into this, but in terms of single-handedly, the governor single-handedly directing policy. So can you sort of explain why you think we're heading towards, or we're getting a taste of socialism right now? I found it to be, if anything, more executive overreach. That to me is a fair assessment, or even Diet Coke totalitarianism, I guess. But I just don't see the socialist angle, because we still have such a wide variety of economic conditions here in our state to start with.
Certainly. And, you know, I think in the context of socialism, be it small S or capital S socialism, there's been an element of that in our society, politically, socially, et cetera, for decades, probably since the inception of the U.S. in one form or the other. Certainly, we've seen it amplified and ramped up during times of national crisis or health emergencies like this. You know, at the end of the Depression, we saw a lot of programs that folks, especially at the time, decried as socialist. We've sort of accepted them as a society and as a people. You know, things like the Social Security Act. Of course, we value that there is Social Security for people to take advantage of and to supplement their retirement income with. As a society, again, we've learned to accept some of these ideas, which are born out of, you know, pure socialism, if you will, free education. I believe, as I think everyone does, that K-12 education is not only important, it's necessary. It's sort of like a fundamental building block. It's like carbon, you know. It's like the building block of everything that a person will become. And in its purest form, free education, you know, like that's one of the main tenets of socialism and Marxism. But we accept it. So there is a degree, I believe, of socialist policy that is acceptable and tolerable by the American people, because in a lot of cases, they don't often pass the line of our unique liberties as a republic and also as a capitalist society. But I think what going back to the tweet, I think what is we're seeing right now is this rapid expansion, if only temporary or presented as temporary, in socialist policies or socialist leaning policies. Are you having an okay time with my video and audio, Bill?
Your audio is totally fine. The video is a little slow, but it seems like the audio is not the same situation. So it's fine, to be honest. I mean, as long as it works for you, you know.
Okay, you can hear. All right.
Yeah.
So I think going back specifically to that that tweet, and you know, my question to you was more provocative than it was practical. I wasn't necessarily saying, "Hey, Bill, list the things you find funny here." It was more thought provoking, and I think that's kind of my MO on Twitter. Oftentimes, I drop little one-liners or things like that, and it's. And I'll confess, I don't always follow what happens afterwards, but I do that to provoke what I think is good thought or thought that people should consider, things that people should consider. So when I wasn't trying to prompt just you, you know, to think about what was funny about it, just in general, what was funny about it. What I think is happening is, and this is specifically what I believe Candace Owens was referring to, is we're seeing across the country, we're seeing this divide between some states that are really embracing every single aspect of locking down and taking every single precaution and every step to its maximum degree. And then we see states doing the exact opposite. And of course, there are so many variables between these states, whether it's population density, location, geographically, all of these things factor in. But these dialogues and discussions will start to occur that revolve around, oh, look, this state, it's a Republican state. And look, they're not going to close and everybody's going to die. Or, oh, look, it's a Democrat state and they're commies and they locked everybody in their houses with chains, you know. And somewhere in the middle, there's this truth. And so when I look at what's going on, and again, of course, I'm going to be tainted by the Rhode Island lens through which I view everything. Not everything, but what we're talking about here. We're seeing that. We are seeing, in my opinion, and again, there's a difference between big S socialism, you know, capital S socialism and small S socialism. Some of the policies we're seeing are certainly fitting with what socialism is. We have been seeing that. So when I look at where we are today and I see these policies being put in place, and not just in Rhode Island, where the state is dictating to businesses, this is how you will run your business. Your business that you created with your own money, your own ingenuity, the skin off of your knuckles, the blood out of your cuts and scrapes, and the three mortgages on your house, and the wagering with your children's college funds that you did to create that business, well, we're going to tell you exactly how you can run it. And if we don't, at the barrel of a gun, we're going to come in there and we're going to punish you. Now, when I say that, hey, Chippendale, wow, that's pretty inflammatory. No one's coming in with a gun and pointing it at people. When I say that, what I'm saying is the full force of the government is coming in and saying, you will do this or else you will be, and this is not hyperbole, this is in the executive orders through the statutes that are enabling these executive orders, you are subject to arrest, fine, and imprisonment. That is at the barrel of the gun, in my opinion, and in the spirit of this conversation. So we also have that same government coming into my church and my neighbor's church and my neighbor's synagogue and my neighbor's mosque and saying, you shall not worship God. You shall not associate with these other people who worship God the same way you do, or else at the barrel of the gun. We're seeing these things now being done in the name of public health, which is obviously laudable. And certainly something we have to be doing right now. But we're seeing these things being done in the name of public health that go above and beyond where we draw that line as Americans as far as socialism and what American capitalism looks like. So I don't think Candace Owens' tweet was off point, and I think she too was trying to be a provocateur. This is the tip of the iceberg. If we keep doing this, what's to separate us from every other socialist experiment or Marxist experiment in the history of the world?
I guess one thing that jumps out to me is, you know, driving around the state this weekend, I went down to Narragansett, North Kingstown, really all over Washington County, all over Providence County. And I saw civilians had removed parking barricades in Narragansett, parked, entered the beach. There's a big sign that says beach closed. You know, the police were there. They weren't doing anything about it. So there's this, you know, wiggle room, if you will, where it's certainly not like if you were in China or Venezuela or something of that nature, where people are by and large getting nailed at the point of the gun. Now, there are situations, we're seeing videos in New York where police are aggressively going after people who don't have masks on the subway. I saw a woman get body slammed in front of her kids by the NYPD on video over the weekend. So it is true that there are different approaches, but to me, again, with the public health element, I wonder how can we balance the fact that there is at least some evidence that is irrefutable that social distancing and masking, whatever it may be, is working, and that we have people who are just completely dismissive of that. And if there is this asymptomatic carrier element, to the extent that there very well could be, I mean, how do we manage that then? I guess I would ask you that as a member of the General Assembly. And then also, what's going on with the General Assembly, you know, to be there and serve in that oversight capacity that might be able to then balance out some of these things that you're concerned about?
Yeah, sure. So first, I think it's important to for the record, without getting into too many personal details, to say that I am a member of the extremely vulnerable population in the state of Rhode Island to this particular disease or any sort of respiratory disease due to an extremely compromised immune system, again, for reasons that aren't necessary to get into. But I have been taking every precaution myself, on the rare occasions I leave my house and even before it was cool, I was in my house, you know, boarded up with the windows before it was ordered. I'll go to the pharmacy or what have you. I will avail myself to everything. I'll double glove. I spray everything with the mixture. I use the hand sanitizer, the masks. I got it all going on because I'm responsible for my own health at the end of the day. If I contract this disease and die because I was stupid and went out and played frisbee in the park with 13 other friends, well, I died because I was stupid. I think in this day of the internet, where we're all clearly experts in whatever it is we're talking about, we can say that it's been proven that this works. It's been disproven that that works. And I'll be the first person to say that I don't know. I don't know how much my mask is doing, but the right half of my brain tells me that it's doing something. The hand sanitizer, the same thing. I'm employing common sense based on guidelines and recommendations that are coming out from medical professionals. I think everyone should. I would never go visit an elderly loved one just because I miss them so much. I would never go to that keg party for all the graduates who had that, you know, that blacklisted hidden keg party or whatever. Those are personal decisions that people have to make. As Americans, we've always been, you know, to steal from one of my political, I'll never use the word heroes, but role models, Theodore Roosevelt, we are rugged individuals. Rugged individualism is at the core of our fabric as Americans. It's one of the things that separates us from literally every nation on this planet, and always has. And that is also part of why, Bill, you saw those things you saw, removing barriers and those. That's vandalism. If there's a sign that says you can't go down that pathway, that's trespassing. That stuff isn't cool in my book. That shouldn't be done. if you were to park at a friend's house three blocks away from that entry and then went down, that's fine. As long as you don't do something that could potentially harm another person or violate a law, again, like vandalism, et cetera, then I think that's fine. I think there are limits where people can and should be able to make decisions on what they feel is good for them, as long as they're not jeopardizing the health of, and well-being of other people. But there are other aspects, Bill, that are, I think, not being addressed very, very well by anyone. And this is fairly common throughout the country. And right now, not everyone is a spiritual person, but a lot of people are spiritual, religious people. And in a lot of cases, and this has been true for me in certain periods of my life, my faith and my spirituality was the sole thing that has gotten me through some very difficult periods of my life. And today is a time where that sort of a tool would be exceptionally valuable. And so I think when we're being told, hey, look, it's okay for you to go give money to a woman who's being exploited at a strip club, but yet you can't go get ashes on Ash Wednesday or palms on Palm Sunday. At that point, it's not questionable. There is no opinion there. That is evidence. It is black and white. We have picked and we have chosen winners and losers. And the First Amendment lost on that one. The First Amendment right to see tatas does not supersede my First Amendment right to associate with whomever I choose, wherever I choose, and practice whatever religion I choose to practice. And I believe if that isn't rectified soon, Bill, there will be a popular uprising. And I'm not talking pitchforks and torches. I'm talking people will say you've crossed the line and something will happen, whether it's a mass gathering, a mass, I don't know what it would look like. But my email box has a fairly good idea of how many people are very upset about this. And I think this one here may be the one that breaks the camel's back on this. So we do have to try to balance that being smart about public health policy versus the sanctity of our liberties as Americans. And, you know, we can quote historical figures all we like to support our positions. And I almost just did. I stopped myself, thankfully, because it's kind of getting cliche at this point. But we, as Americans, need to be able to make the best and most educated choice we can for ourselves. Again, as long as we're not harming other people. So you then asked, what is the legislature doing about this and what should the legislature be doing about this? I mean, clearly this is the point in the legislative session where we would be very heavily into the budget. You know, at this point we would really be understanding just exactly the fiscal condition of our state, what needs to be done.
May estimated revenue period is now basically at this point.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So we that would pretty much be what we were immersed in. Now, certainly in the background, that's still going on. Our fiscal staff, the House fiscal staff at a minimum, has been working through. I'm sure the Senate and the governor's staff has as well. But it's exceptionally difficult for them to do their job. And I'll tell you, on the House side, we have some of the smartest financial minds available anywhere, I think, who do that job. And frankly, it's like trying to put a car back together when you don't have 50% of the pieces and you don't know the make and model of the car. That's the task they're dealing with right now. It's Herculean. So I think what we're going to see probably, and we've seen a little bit of it already, is the Finance Committee will start to take some activity. I'd like to see a little bit more robust activity as far as that, because we do have to prepare for the budget season. The legislature in general, and I have certainly advocated for this as well as my Republican colleagues alongside, you know, we've stood together on this. We believe that the legislature should have already approximately 5 or 6 weeks ago, laid out the plan on how we will convene as a body and how we will legislate. We are one of three co-equal branches of government right now, and we wrote the law that gave the governor the authority to do what's being done right now. We also, as it turns out, gave ourselves the authority to stop the governor from engaging in the activity that's currently being engaged in. However, without consent of the body, the elected Speaker of the House and the elected Senate, President of the Senate, have decided in conference with the governor that the legislature does not need to stand. And so we have been standing down. And I think that's probably one of the more misguided and cowardly, frankly, positions that has been taken by leadership in the legislature, certainly since I've been paying attention. And the reason I say that is because it's exceptionally irresponsible for us to not be in there. And although we don't have all the pieces of that car or the make or model, we have enough where we could be working on them. We could be looking at things that we know we're going to have to do. We know. It's not a question. We know we will have to cut our budget. No one's even questioning that. Why aren't we there now, vigorously exploring ideas from all of the members, not just from two or three co-chairs on the finance committee and special little, joint chamber clubs and stuff like that? We need the full body. We need the full membership to be working on this. Just because we're not a member of the finance committee doesn't mean that we don't have input or suggestions to guide or help guide the state through this financially. And I think to prevent us or to disallow us from being able to do that is exceptionally harmful. So right now, without the ability to exercise my voice as a legislator, to exercise my voting privileges as a legislator, and not due to a lack of want, it's due to a lack of ability. I am disallowed from doing my job. There are 14,000 registered voters approximately in my district who now do not have a voice in government. They don't have anyone who can represent their will in the way that our state moves forward. And certainly in District 40, the western part of Rhode Island, Foster, Gloucester, and Green, Western Coventry, these are rugged individuals. And these are people who want to see progress. And they're not seeing it. And it's getting to the point where they're expressing their dissatisfaction with our inability to do our jobs on an hourly basis. I mean, my email box has... I'll tell you, during the tolls, during gay marriage, during, pick the most controversial issue you can think of, I have not had as many points of contact with constituents as I have since this whole thing started. So that tells you that obviously this is impacting everyone. And that tells you just how concerned people are about it.
And I guess kind of going back to what we started on from an oversight perspective, you have a proposal by the governor. All right, we're going to roll out phase one. There are issues that are, frankly, totally unresolved. I mean, we can look at the nursing home issue. I've been advocating for, just from where what I see from where I live, there's a complete lack of an adequate infrastructure for testing in the urban core, where you have the physician's referral requirement is still there. A lot of these folks don't even have, many of them don't even speak English, Spanish, or Portuguese. They live in, triple deckers with multi-generations. They have no primary care physician. They're not being tested. So their voice isn't being heard. So it's this robust lack of oversight that is not taking place in the General Assembly. What would it take for, I mean, I know the speaker is out riding his motorcycle or whatever it is. He was, probably running his law practice, et cetera. What is it going to take to get the General Assembly, the full body in session, whether it's on Zoom or meeting outdoors in, Roger Williams Park, speaking to each other in megaphones, whatever it is? I mean, what is it going to take to get the GA back in there from an oversight perspective that can at least evaluate, assess, make recommendations or changes to what the governor's position is, and then one, hopefully give a broader base of the state's population a voice, but then also two, going back to the original conversation here of socialism or executive overreach, however it's framed, get the three branches of government functioning in the way that it's intended, they're intended to be. What would it take for that to happen sometime like today? I mean, could that happen?
Yes, absolutely could happen today. It takes the fortitude of two men and one woman to allow it to happen. And that's it, Bill. It's willpower. There's nothing impeding us from doing our jobs except for the opinion of three people who believe that the executive branch is doing a fine job and there's no need for the legislature to meet. So what would it take? It would take the guts. And I could opine as to why those guts don't exist. One of those opinions would be, we're 5 or 6 months away from an election, and who wants to go in and make drastic, painful cuts to a budget that will impact detrimentally every single Rhode Islander, and then have to ask those same people for a vote? For any politician, that is distasteful, a scenario as you could possibly imagine. However, we have a fiduciary responsibility to the people who elected us to do exactly that. And if I have to go in there and I have to make votes and decisions on making terribly painful cuts, and it ends up costing me my seat in the assembly, well, so be it. That I will never apologize for doing my job. I will never apologize for doing it in the way that I felt was the best way it had to be done. But regrettably, there doesn't seem to be enough of my colleagues who feel the same way to compel our leaders, and I'm using air quotes. Actually, I don't have to say that now because we're doing Skype. Zoom, so I'm really doing it. Our leaders to bring us back in there. Oversight. Yeah, we need oversight. I've been a member of House Oversight since 2013 when it was re-impaneled. It had been a dead committee for a very long time and was re-impaneled by Speaker Fox. I've been on that committee since then, except for a short hiatus in I think, 2017. And I have seen that body do amazing work. That committee has done tremendous work as it pertains to UHIP, all the DHS issues, the DCYF issues. Prior to that, the rollout of healthcare of HealthSource Rhode Island. We guided and oversaw the administrative branch through those things, and we still it was an ongoing project when we shut down the assembly. But that committee is not only specifically designed for that purpose, but it's really good at it. The members have become very, very good at getting through the fluff and getting down to the numbers and to the point of the matter to ask the right questions and demand the right responses. But instead of having that oversight committee do its job, there was created a task force, and you can Google the word task force in the House rules and the Constitution and everything else. There ain't no such thing. It's a fabricated body that works outside the rules and the laws of the state of Rhode Island. And frankly, if you ask me, it's a dog and pony show. Why don't we use the House Oversight Committee for overseeing the expenditures of millions and millions and billions of dollars of taxpayers' money? Why wouldn't we do that? We in 2000, I think it was 2016, it was an election year. In September of an election year, we called an extraordinary meeting of House Oversight and House Finance because UHIP went off the rails. And we had gone about $60 million over the budgeted amount for UHIP, and that prompted this emergency election year meeting of House Oversight. We're talking about $1.5 billion or something right now, but yet that doesn't warrant House Oversight doing its job. That doesn't pass the smell test. If anyone thinks that is an appropriate response, they should probably pay closer attention to the way their government works, because that is not only an inappropriate response. It's legislative malpractice is what it is. I don't know if I hit every single question because you had quite a few in there. I don't know if I hit them all, so feel free to react.
No, that's it. I mean, it's the oversight element that is the priority. Yeah. And you know, right now I feel like the media is serving in that capacity where, you know, on a daily basis, where that's who's asking the questions that, frankly, the General Assembly should be asking, for lack of a better term, at this point, opinion. You know,
Bill, if it wasn't for you and the the journalists out there who are doing what you guys do every day and asking these questions, I'd be in the dark as a legislator, let alone the general public. But I still feel that your job is being retarded by the fact that you can't ask follow-up questions. You can't be in those meetings. You can't be at those press conferences. It's holding the Fourth Estate back and saying, okay, we'll give you dribs and drabs of very filtered and very selective information vis-a-vis the answering of the questions we select, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's been manipulated since day one. I don't like it one bit. There are still questions out there on the table, and they are COVID-related, that are being ignored by the administration, such as the Cranston Street Armory question and the loss of all the protective gear that was there. What happened? Why is no one answering the reporter who's asking these questions? Where did our PPE go? It was allegedly ruined by a leak in a state-owned or state-leased building. Well, that warrants a response from the administration. They won't even—they're ignoring the question. They're playing the game like your two-year-old does. You know, if I cover my eyes, then I must have disappeared. You know, they're just not answering the question because they want it to go away. That's just one of so many things that need to be addressed. Where none of us individually are experts enough in any field to shepherd the state of Rhode Island through this thing. However, I can tell you this, those of my colleagues who are also in business understand things a little bit differently than those colleagues who are not in business or who aren't business owners, and or the governor, who is, despite having a venture capitalist firm at one point, doesn't really know how to run a small business. Making decisions, especially in the hospitality industry, which are drawing national headlines and making people scratch their head and saying, you know, is there even a straw you could grasp at to try to add common sense to these decisions? And so far, the answer has been no. Well, why not? We have people in the General Assembly whose entire lives they've run restaurants, catering businesses, bars, hotels. Why aren't we bringing those people in? Why aren't we bringing the Hospitality Association in, who are chomping at the bit to get into this champing at the bit, I believe the expression is, to get at the discussion and to offer solutions, things that they know will work. These are all the questions that need to be asked, and we do need to work as a team. And that team should include the legislature, and it should also include a fully functional court, which we do not have right now.
Mike Chippendale, ladies and gentlemen, Representative District 40. Not afraid to be provocative on Twitter. No question about it.
No, right. Bill, I appreciate you you engaging in my provoking, and I hope that this conversation has done that. It's caused people to just pause and think. And I mean, whatever folks conclude is whatever they conclude. But you know, take the information, ask the questions in your head, ask the questions out loud, and just question everything. You know, we are smart enough in most cases to navigate through these things. We just have to be willing to do it.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.